we run into limiting beliefs about ourselves. That's one of the things the Big Leap and the new book are about, is how to spot those limiting beliefs. And most of them come before you took that little lunch box and walked off to kindergarten for the first time. You know, a lot of our most limiting beliefs are installed before we can think for ourselves. And like the biggest one I run across in people, and you know, I've run across this in juvenile delinquents, and I've run across it in corporate CEOs. It's a fundamental belief that you have a flaw in some way, that you don't believe you're entitled to the good things of life. You don't believe that you deserve love. You don't believe that you deserve abundance. And these are not rational beliefs. These are old unconscious beliefs, like I say, before you could really think for yourself.
Hey friends, welcome to The Good Life with Michelle Lamoureux, a show for women in midlife who want to live happier, healthier, and more meaningful lives. I'm your host, Michelle Lamoureux, a self-love coach and the author of Design a Life You Love. And together we're going to be doing just that. Each week I bring on world-class experts, best-selling authors, leading entrepreneurs, and also do solo casts with the intention of inviting you to get connected to what you really desire from your life. This show is produced with love every week. There's inspiration and actionable tips in every episode because I want to see women playing a starring role in their lives instead of living on the sidelines. Be sure to join the Good Life Community newsletter over at thegoodlifecoach.com for more inspiration and tips to live your best midlife. And make sure you're following the show on your favorite podcast player. I'm so glad that you're here. Hey friends, and welcome back to the show. I've got a really inspiring interview lined up for you today. Have you heard of the phrase, your zone of genius? And if not, I'm telling you, this is something you're going to want to pay attention to. Years ago, when I started out as an entrepreneur, I just kept hearing this phrase over and over again. And it was when I picked up the book, The Big Leap, that I understood that this concept originated from today's guest. His name is Dr. Gay Hendricks, and he has served for more than 30 years as one of the major contributors to the fields of relationship transformation and body-mind therapies. Along with his wife, Dr. Kathleen Hendricks, Gay is the author of many bestsellers, including Conscious Loving, At the Speed of Life, and the New York Times bestseller, Five Wishes. Dr. Hendricks received his PhD in counseling psychology from Stanford in 1974, and after a 21-year career as a professor at the University of Colorado, he founded the Hendricks Institute and later co-founded its charitable organization, the Foundation for Conscious Living. Gay has appeared on more than 500 radio and television shows, including The Oprah Winfrey Show and many others. And today we are talking about The Big Leap, the concepts within it, and how we want to be aspiring to be living from and spending our time within our zone of genius. And as you tune in, we're going to dive into what our upper limit problems are and how we can overcome those so that we can really be thriving and contributing in the way that we are meant to. This is one of my most favorite topics to talk about, and his book has been a fantastic teacher for me. He's now got a companion book to The Big Leap called Your Big Leap Year. I think you're going to absolutely love this conversation, and I cannot wait to share it with you. So on that note, let's get into the show. Here we go. Welcome, Dr. Hendricks. What an honor to have you on the show today. I'm so excited.
Thank you, Michelle. It's great to be with you.
So I launched my podcast 5 years ago. And in the very first year, I used to ask my guests, most of whom at the time, many of them were seven-figure female entrepreneurs. And I'd say, what book do you recommend my listeners read? In your book, The Big Leap kept coming up. But what's interesting is that I would pick it up and I would get through the first chapter and I'm like, oh my God, this is genius. And I had so much resistance myself. And I recently picked it back up, and I gifted it immediately to my brother, who's an entrepreneur, and a couple other friends. But my own work with it, it's interesting. I'm for sure hitting an upper limit problem, which we'll get into, but I think it's interesting because this is the work. This is why we're here.
I agree. I think that we're all on a quest to liberate our genius and also learn how to have that serve ourselves and other people. And I've found in my last, since I first clicked on this idea 40 years ago, I've made it my life's quest to open up the genius of my work and the genius of my relationship with Katie, which goes back 44 years now. And so I think it's the quest of a lifetime to find out what your unique gifts are and how to share them with the world.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And actually, my show's for midlife women. And I think what is different about my show is the reason I started it is because I don't want women living on the sidelines of their lives. So meaning and fulfillment is at the heart of the show. I always talk about those inner whispers and paying attention, but I'm on the journey with my audience. I'm not quite, in that zone yet, as much as I think I'm in my zone of excellence, but I haven't hit the zone of genius yet. And I truly desire to do that. And I want that for my audience as well. So thank you. I agree with you that this is the work. Your Big Leap Year is your latest book, which came out this year. Tell us why you wrote this book.
Well, I wrote it because people kept sending me emails asking me, could I do that? Everybody wanted a day at a time book. And so I put off doing it for 15 years. And finally, this past year, I had time to do it. And so what I wanted to do was take the concepts in the Big Leap, like the upper limit problem and the zone of genius, and break them down into some little thing that you could do every day. And some of the activities in the book, there's 366 of them, and including one extra for leap years. And you don't have to start it on January 1st, though. You can start it anytime. Yes. But it has 366 daily little leaps in it that'll keep you on track. One of the big things that happens when you have a big aha moment in life, like if you read a book that changes your life or something, you really need something then to integrate the idea into your life in kind of bite-sized ways. Because, it's one thing to have a big awakening, but to really make it count in your life, you've got to put it into the daily fabric of your daily life. And so that's what the new book is designed to do. And I get email every day from people that are doing it, that are, it came out on February 13th. So by now, a lot of people are up to, day 30 or something like that. And they are telling me great things about all the activities in it. So it's a heartwarming way to wake up every day to read all those comments from people who are doing the book.
I love it. I've been going through, I kind of flip through the different pieces, and then, I'm starting myself. And I love that you use the word heartwarming for what you're receiving, because it's heartwarming to read it. It feels supportive and loving, which is, it seems, the essence of what you're about and the work that you do with your wife as well. Gay, I have a question for you, because when I read your bio, with all of the different things you've done, and you're even writing mystery novels now, which I found really interesting. If I were to meet you, like we were at a party and somebody introduced me to you, what would you say? Like if I said, what do you do, Gay? How would you answer that?
Well, I've answered it. I say to people, by trade, I'm a psychologist and I write books and as a way of expressing that. And so I think of myself professionally as a psychologist, because I started out and, got my doctorate in counseling psychology from Stanford, and then taught for 21 years at the University of Colorado, taught counseling psychology to a generation or two of graduate students. Then after Oprah stepped into our lives, or Katie and I say our lives before Oprah and after Oprah are very different, because we were both, you know, university professors, and we both had a private practice where we would work with 10 couples in our living room. And then Oprah called, and when our book Conscious Loving came out, and I say we went overnight from working with 10 couples in our living room to working with 10 million couples on stage and on television on Oprah. And that really changed our lives in a way, because it freed up a lot of things in our lives, like sending our kids to college, little details like that.
Thanks, Oprah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were able to benefit from that enormously. And we both retired from our university work in about the mid 90s and set up our own institute, the Hendricks Institute. And now we have also our Foundation for Conscious Living, a nonprofit foundation, which we give a lot of grants and scholarships and things like that to. So, many thanks to Oprah. We live in we used to live over in her neighborhood before we moved over to Ojai, but she's about 20 miles away now. So wherever you are today, dear, thank you very much for all the gifts and blessings you afforded us.
I love this. I love it so much. And what I also love about it is that you are in some level of alignment to have that opportunity come, and then to be able to impact so many more people with your work, which is clearly part of your path. And that's why I think what you're doing with the zone, like getting people into their zone of genius, is important, because I think you can get so far, but to be truly in alignment, I think is, you know, where they, was it, you know, they say the opportunity, you know, luck meets opportunity, where like things truly come and more magical living happens. Would you agree with that?
I very much would. One of the things I tell our students is the longest journey they'll ever make is 12 inches from their head down to their heart. And what I mean by that is there's a moment in life where you start asking yourself, what do I most love to do? That's kind of a genius question to get into the game with. What do you love most? What makes you light up? What makes you spend an hour doing it that seems like 2 minutes. In fact, Einstein was kind of gave me the original idea in a way, because his idea was that 1 minute on a hot stove feels like an hour, but an hour with your beloved goes by like a minute. And so why does that happen? And that started me thinking, what are those things that when I'm doing them, I lose track of time? I'm so into them that, you know, Katie will say, hey, it's time for us to go out for lunch or whatever. And I'll say, oh, okay. And I didn't realize I was hungry, but I have been hungry for an hour and I hadn't even thought of it because I've been so into what I was doing. Well, look for those kind of things and find a way to start doing them more, because to me, your genius zone is not just your unique abilities, but it's your ability to do them in a way that benefits other people as well as yourself. Yes. When I think when you're in your true genius zone, you'll be doing things that benefit you and also make a contribution to other people. And one of my long ago mentors, Abraham Maslow, said, it doesn't matter if you're making a genius soup or writing a genius symphony, it calls on that deep part of yourself. And so the soup may be only for 2 people or 5 people or 10 people, and the symphony might be heard by 1 million people, but it all comes out of that same creative space inside of doing what you most love to do and making a contribution at the same time.
So beautiful. It's being in that flow state. And you write in the end of your book, when you were 5, and having an awareness of the interconnectedness of all of life and beings and sort of your place in it, which gave you a sense of peace. And I think that when we move out of the way, we allow that wisdom, our soul, to remember why we're here and to actually come forth. But there's resistance.
Yes.
For some reason, there's a lot of resistance to that. It's not as natural as one would hope it would be.
Well, yes, because also we run into limiting beliefs about ourselves. That's one of the things the Big Leap and the new book are about, is how to spot those limiting beliefs. And most of them come before you took that little lunch box and walked off to kindergarten for the first time. You know, a lot of our most limiting beliefs are installed before we can think for ourselves. And like the biggest one I run across in people, and, you know, I've run across this in juvenile delinquents and I've run across it in corporate CEOs. It's a fundamental belief that you have a flaw in some way, that you don't believe you're entitled to the good things of life. You don't believe that you deserve love. You don't believe that you deserve abundance. And these are not rational beliefs. These are old unconscious beliefs. Like I say, before you could really think for yourself, you see, you know, your parents or other adults or other siblings around you thinking a certain way, and then you kind of automatically adopt that way of seeing things. And I'm always astonished at the amount to which very, very brilliant people also are oblivious to some of those early influences in their lives.
Yeah, I think that's so critical to understand. And it's part of the work I've been journeying on, because I desire to be in that zone of genius. And my biggest fear in life, honestly, Gay, is that I won't fulfill my soul mission. That's the biggest fear I have.
Yes. And I think when you get up into midlife, it becomes much, much more acute.
Yes.
One of my old friends who passed away a couple of years ago, Barbara Marx Hubbard, had the pleasure of knowing her for, gosh, most of my life, and speaking with her on many occasions and things like that. And one of the things she says is, particularly for women, I think, in fact, the first time I ever heard her speak, I was so amazed by what she said, because she was speaking to women at the time, but the same thing could apply to men. When you especially get up into your 40s and your 50s, Barbara said that women experience what she called vocational arousal, this power that comes through them to find their genius, to find what their true life mission is. And it's a sacred thing, that it's something that we need to honor. And I'm not saying it's only for women, because men too, especially, you know, the great developmental psychologist at Harvard, Erik Erikson, broke down every decade into what he called a developmental crisis or a developmental choice. In your 50s, the choice every moment is between creativity and stagnation.
Stagnation.
So, and it doesn't matter if you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, you can identify what I'm talking about. There's that kind of place in you that wants to go back to sleep, you know, that oh man, you know, that why couldn't I go back to my life of blissful ignorance before I started all this enlightenment stuff? And I started looking into my stuff and started meditating and started going to therapy. And but to me, you know, another one of my great mentors, Jack Downing, who was a great psychiatrist back in my early days and at Stanford, he said that it's a mistake that human beings have to think that we have two faucets in life, one faucet called pleasure and another faucet called pain. And he said that a lot of people keep trying to turn up the pleasure faucet, but keep turning down the pain faucet. But what he said you don't realize in life is that there's only one faucet, and on it, it says awareness. And you either turn that up or turn it down. And yes, every moment in life, and especially once you get up into midlife, it becomes a moment by moment choice to keep choosing creativity, yes, over stagnation. And then Erik Erikson says in your 60s, the choice is between integrity or despair, that you're either getting more and more aligned with your inner principles and more in touch with your feelings and more open to love and positive energy, or you're sinking into despair. And so I think, especially at midlife and beyond, we really owe it to ourselves to crank open that awareness faucet any way we can, and just keep opening up to what I call your genius all of the time. But whatever you call it, it's that part of yourself that's your spark of creativity inside, and it needs to be nurtured.
Yes. I feel like children, like toddlers, naturally seek that space. They're sort of lit up and they're seeking what interests them and makes them joyful, you know, before maybe a nap or getting something to eat. They're just in that. I don't know. It seems to me that they're more tuned in with, because there's not that censorship. So they just get naturally drawn to what calls their heart.
Yes. And I remember when my daughter, she's now in her 50s, but when she was a little kid, from pretty much the time she could, you know, walk and do things, she was only interested in art projects. And I remember so many times I would call her. I would say, "Amanda, come in, come down for dinner." She'd be two rooms away. I wouldn't hear her say anything. "Amanda," I would say louder, you know, "dinner." Wouldn't hear me. I'd walk down there, and she would be so engrossed in an art project. And I'd say, "Hey, did you just hear me?" And she had this particular look. She'd look up like, "Huh?" You know, like, and to this day, that's how she makes her living. She's an artist. And when she's in that state, it's a sacred thing to her. And so I think we all need to find something like that. You know, I happen to be recording a thing just a little while ago for Instagram that was wishing my mother and my grandmother a happy birthday. My mother was born on this day in 1911 and my grandmother in 1980, and both of them just amazing women. So I was thinking quite a bit about childhood and things like that. And it reminded me, I came across a study that was so simple, but it said so much. A bunch of scientists had hung, as part of the experiment, they put little voice-activated mics around the necks of kids on a little necklace and recorded what was said to them for a week. And so this was in a kindergarten setting. So these were little folks that came in for a few hours a day and then they went home. So it was a combination of all the things that were said to them at school and at home for a week. And then the scientists tabulated all of the messages. And I was stunned to see that 85% of the incoming messages were negative in some way, like focusing on don't rather than do.
Yes.
And to me, in a way, that says so much about what happens to us as we grow up. We gradually incorporate more and more of those don'ts and can'ts and you can'ts, and all of those things stack up in our minds. So by the time we get to adulthood, you know, it's a lot of our genius is gone. You know, just look here. I know I'm getting excited about this, but education is one of my passions.
Yes.
And some of my first books were in education. But if you look at kids, just the number of physical movements they can perform before they go into kindergarten is, I understand it, 2,000 or 3,000 different movements.
Wow.
By the time they graduate high school, they're down to only 300 or so of the movements their bodies can make.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about it, that's stunning, because it's a metaphor in a way.
Yes.
For it's just like, you know, most people, while like Shakespeare coined 20,000 new words and put it into the lexicon, to the dictionary. But most people go through life using the same 300 words and over again, you know? So we're just tapping the very surface of what we could be about in our lives.
Absolutely. I love this so much. I love this so much. And I love that your daughter is in her 50s and she's doing what her where her zone of genius was. But look who her parents are. She wasn't going to lose her way. You were not going to let that happen. So for people who are new to this phrase, and it's funny because a lot of people, when I started 5 years ago too with my company, people were talking about, oh, you got to be in your zone of genius. A lot of people are using it. And once I read your book, I always gave attribution because it just became talk about part of the lexicon. Everyone started using this because I think when you read it and you understand it, you're like, this makes so much sense. And you can feel on an intuitive level, on a soulful level, this is where you desire to be. So for people who are just like, oh, I'm not familiar with this, tell us what your zone of genius is.
Yes. I want to contrast it with the zone that's just under it, called the zone of excellence. In the zone of excellence, you're doing stuff you're good at. You're probably better at it than most people. You get rewards for it. People say, atta girl, atta boy. And you make money doing it, and people give you raises for doing it. So it's a good thing. However, I've worked with now, gosh, I think close to 1,800 different executives in different companies and governmental organizations and things like that. People that are occupying their unique skill set in their excellence zone.
Yes.
But what I learned was almost everybody has a hunger to go beyond that into what I started calling your genius zone, which is when you're doing the things you really love. Not just that you're good at, because you can be good at things that eventually exhaust you and stress you out. And, you know, like I read one time, this just floored me, that the king of Spain back a few hundred years ago, when Spain was on top of the world, he kept a diary, this very cogent king. And he said in his diary that he'd had many castles and lived in a palace and had all the gold and everything and the greatest food every day that could be cooked. And he said, out of all that, I've had 14 days where I was actually happy. Mm. And I remember reading that, you know, and at the same time, I kept seeing these license plates or bumper stickers, I guess they called, where people would put them on their bumpers and it would say, I'd rather be sailing. Or I'd rather be skiing, or I'd rather be, you know? So it's like life is kind of trying to keep us in a box where we're not fully using all of our capabilities.
Yes.
You know, I was walking down the hall one time at a very big corporation in the Midwest with the CEO, and I was talking to him about his genius zone. And I said, have you ever stopped and just asked yourself the question, what do I most love to do? And he said, no, I've never done that. And this is a guy, he's a Harvard graduate, you know, he's as smart as human beings can get, plus being able to run a corporation with, you know, 50,000 employees or whatever it has, you know, and yet he'd never actually thought about what he'd most love to do. So I said, let's do a U-turn. We go back to his office. I sat down for 10 minutes. He just asked himself the question, what do I most love to do? And particularly of the stuff I do all day, what is the part of it I love most? Well, that was a turning point in his life, because once you start seeing what your genius zone is, you want to spend more time there. You know, you start with maybe 10 minutes, but pretty soon, I always say, you know, genius is the ultimate positive addiction, because once you kind of get turned onto it, you want to do it more and more and more. And, you know, you're in your genius zone now by being on this podcast, and you probably want to do things all day long that make you feel as good as you do when you're doing this podcast. So 100%. That's what we all should open up to, in my view.
Yes, that's the dream. That's what you said is the dream for me. Absolutely. I remember, excuse me, funny, we talk about the physical symptoms. Did you see what just happened to my voice when you said that? You talked about how people get laryngitis or different things. I don't normally get phlegm in my throat, but did you see? It's interesting. I was like, yes, agreeing with what you just said to me. and had
well,
to
go
clear
along
my throat.
With something I've learned that's those are uncried tears. Laryngitis, cloudiness in your throat, cloudiness in your chest, things that you feel sad about, but you haven't quite gotten alignment with, or maybe told the right person or something like that. See, there's only about three big feeling zones that trigger things like, you know, us getting anxious or phlegmy or whatever it is. One is anger. If you're not communicating with your own anger and communicating anger in a straightforward way, that can clog you up. Sadness, if you're not communicating with it in yourself and outside, that'll clog you up. And fear, particularly because it's at the bottom of a lot of our feelings. You know, even if you're angry or sad about something, you're usually scared about something at the same time.
Yes.
So, you know, like in couples counseling, particularly, I always have my students work on those three feelings first, because those are the ones that bring most people in for counseling when they get stuck on one or more of those emotions.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny that that just happened. I was like, oh, if I hadn't read your book, I was like, okay, this is create that awareness, crank up that awareness so I can maybe go deeper on that for myself. You write, the temptation is strong to remain in the zone of excellence. It's where your own addiction to comfort wants you to stay. The problem is that a deep sacred part of you will wither and die if you stay inside of your zone of, if you stay inside of your zone of excellence. So how do we begin to shift? Because I don't know if this is a good time to go into the upper limit problem, but which you say we need to dissolve.
I
would love to shed some light on, you know, what's holding us back. And I will say, just in reflection of the CEOs that you said you worked with, I started out wanting to go to law school. I worked in a law firm. I worked my way up as a director of marketing. But everyone there, I think, was just like you said, they're just really bright. And they're going to those next levels of what they feel is expected of them. And you also mentioned how we have those wounds from when we're little, even to the point where we're not even aware of those things. We're so little, where we want to feel worthy. So if we have a deep core belief that we're unlovable as we are, we're going to keep working hard to prove our worth so that we can feel that we are worthy of love, right? So that's a big barrier. That's a big wall. Or program to reboot and start over. Yeah.
Yes, that's a good way to put it, to think of it as a computer program that you can reinstall. Well, do you remember a little while ago, I was talking about that fundamental big belief that a lot of people have, that they have a fundamental flaw in them, that they're unlovable.
Yes.
That for some reason, they're fundamentally unlovable.
Yes.
And those are all, you know, what some people call imaginary crimes that we get convicted of when we're little,
yes.
Like the crime of being unwanted or the crime of being unlovable. And so we have a lot of those limiting beliefs by the time we get up into adulthood. And life has to become about seeing through those upper limit beliefs. The only way to do that is to kind of start catching yourself in the middle of them. You know, one day you're maybe feeling kind of bummed out, and then you stop and reflect for 10 seconds and realize, oh, I have an old belief that I don't deserve to shine in life. That's another one of the big beliefs that people get caught up in. It's okay for them to be a support person, but they don't feel like they can be a star in their own lives and discover their own genius zone.
Yes, yes.
And so, and supporting other people is a great thing. Nothing wrong with that. But if you do that in a way that hides your own light, that's not a good thing. You know, there's a good reason on the airplane where it says, put on your own oxygen mask first.
Yes.
You know, you got to have your own supply of good nurturing inside yourself.
Yes.
You know, I use the flow of love and good feeling inside myself as a barometer. If I stop feeling that for a second, I stop and think, what happened just then? Did I say something that wasn't exactly true? You know, and it can be just a number of different things, but if you begin to cultivate that flow of good feeling inside you, then you can begin to use it as a steering mechanism in life, a way to get yourself around, because go more in the direction of what makes you feel that feeling and less in the direction of what squelches that feeling.
Absolutely. Do you think that's why we're here? Not to move away from that, but to basically reclaim why I do believe that we're gifted something before we come here, and that it's our journey to remember the truth of, you know, those things that when we're little light us up, and sort of reclaim those gifts and put them out there. But I'd love to hear your perspective. Why do you think we're here? I know that's sort of a bigger picture life meaning, but let's go there.
Okay, I'd love to go there. Well, in my view, life meaning as at its best when I can expand every day in love, creativity, positive energy, abundance, when I can expand in my genius every day while inspiring other people to expand and live in theirs. Mm. That's my life purpose, and that's what I've chosen. Now, none of us know exactly if there's a bigger purpose to life. You know, the universe leaves some clues. The universe is the most creative thing. I mean, look at this. There are 9 million species on this planet. Think of that. 9 million species. Amazing. That's like the population of New York City in species. How many of them can sit here and have a conversation like we're having?
Yes.
One.
Yep.
Maybe on other planets, they're having a talk show right now where I'm talking to you about soccer, football, or something, you know. but we are having this unique opportunity to be distinct among 9 million species. Also, our lives begin in a massive explosion of creation, because you and I were one of 250,000 or so sperm cells that left our dad that night and did the equivalent of a 6-kilometer swim proportionate to our size and beat out 250,000 other people who were running this big cosmic marathon. And what happened? When you get to the egg, the sperm head explodes in this gigantic explosion of creativity, and the egg embraces it and welcomes in. And just that moment, as the moment it has become one, it starts to divide again and becomes two and four. And almost from that moment of first creation, we are kind of, in a way, getting more and more complicated versions of creation going, until now we get to be a human being having this conversation at a very flowering point of human evolution. You know, we have to just celebrate that we're occupying a very elite, very privileged zone of life, that we are right now having a conversation about the big leap and a new book and that kind of thing, rather than talking about, you know, what you're going to have for lunch and whether you're going to be able to find lunch today. So blessings to those who are having that level of struggle, and celebration to us who are having a different level of conversation on planet Earth. I want to have a planet Earth eventually. This is what my students call my 500-year plan. When I get really grandiose, I start envisioning a world where everybody is in touch with their genius zone. And I don't know if that's a 500-year plan, but at some point, can't you just see humanity as a whole different place where we're celebrating our genius and being there for everybody else's genius? I mean, what a way to live, and what a way to transform our planet. So that's what I'm up to, and I know that's what you're up to, at least in your day job. So let's just get more people in on the game.
I love it. And I think it's interesting because I read in your book that, you know, when you were 50, you thought you were going to retire, and you yeah. After 3 weeks, you're like, this is not happening. Because I think there's another word you keep using, and I have to tell you why I love it so much. I was working with a coach recently, and she said, pick your two core values. And I said, creativity, which I haven't been expressing in the way I know my soul wants me to. And the word that keeps coming up for me is expansion. And I love, Gay, what you write, and you write it over and over and over in your book, both books. I'm going to try to find it on my sheet because you've said it numerous times here, but you said, I think the zone of genius as a continual spiral. You go higher and higher every day as you expand your capacity for more love, abundance, and success. And you've also used the word creativity for your genius and in the book. And that so resonated for me. But even everything you just said, even about the sperm going to the egg and the explosion, that's and the universe is expanding. It's literally a daily invitation for us all to be expanding into why we're here. It's just that I think that's why we get, like you said, either sick or sad, or we're feeling the dissonance within because we're not in alignment, and we know that we can feel good. And we should be, because if we're part of this expanding cosmos, then that's our natural state. Yes, I'm getting excited too, apparently.
Well, hey, no, your glasses are coming off. You're ready to enter the ring. Well, back in the happy year of 1927, some scientists figured out that not only was the universe expanding, but it was expanding at 10 to the 23rd miles per hour. Now, 10 to the 6th is a million. Wow. So imagine what 10 to the 23rd is. So we're in the middle of this amazing cosmic expansion. And what does that mean for us personally? Well, it means for us personally that we should take every opportunity to grow and open up to new data and open up to learning more about ourselves and more about our emotions and more about our spirit. You know, to me, one of the most important things in life is to open up to our spiritual essence, which I think has a lot to do with our genius. I mean, our spiritual essence, why we're really here, how did we get here? Those questions are part of the wonder questions that I think every human being needs to answer and to ask to have a good life. You don't have to come up with all the answers, but part of the beauty of life is wondering about the big questions. Einstein wondered for, I think in his notebooks, he said it was more than 25 years every day about the same problem in physics that he was working on. He would go and wonder about that for 10 or 15 minutes or an hour. Mm. And to me, that's a celebration that wonder is one of the greatest powers in the universe and very much an undiscovered superpower, I think, of human beings. Because think of the one moment of wonder that it took, you know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak to figure out, oh, that's how a computer could work at home. Okay, you know, I see how. And so to have this vision of everybody having their own computer, not just a giant machine over in a laboratory somewhere. You know, what a breakthrough idea. Or then Steve Jobs to put 1,000 songs on your phone. You know, that's a whole other thing. And he's just one of millions of people who got to where they are and got us to where we are through the sacred superpower of wonder.
I love it. I love the idea of wonder and also getting connected to our spiritual selves. And I think, you know, that's part of the invitation. And maybe, do you have any practices? So let's say somebody's hitting their upper level. They're hitting that upper limit. I'm wondering, did we even define that? I mean, I think it's kind of obvious what an upper limit problem is, but let's take one step back in case I didn't ask you that more directly to make it clear, because I've obviously read your books. Yeah, we're self-sabotaging, the worry comes in, the belief systems. Let's talk about how we can get people moving forward. How do they start dissolving it and moving closer so that they can get out of either their zone of incompetence, hopefully they're, you know, at least in zone of excellence, and then moving towards their zone of genius.
One quick cue is to begin to notice when you feel fear or anxiety in your belly, because that's one of the clearest indicators that you're operating in some kind of an upper limit problem. You're engaged in sabotaging yourself in some way. So get good at pointing and naming your fear. Okay, I'm feeling scared right now. Upper limits problems can come in many ways. Worry is a big upper limit problem, especially worry about stuff you have no possibility of controlling, which is about 99% of our worry is about things that we couldn't possibly do anything about anyway. Yes. And so worry is one quick way we shut ourselves down. Accidents, having a little trip or banging yourself on a piece of furniture or whacking your thumb, that's another one. Getting sick or getting off-center feeling. I'll give you an example. I had a big executive that was, she was in her 50s, and she was really good at speaking to 12 people at a board meeting or 6 people in a team meeting, but she was not very good at speaking to 2,000 people at the annual meeting, which she had been called on to do. And so I was coaching her up, and I actually had her going in her spare time to a club. I can't remember if it was Toastmasters or something like that, where they are meant to get up and give a 1-minute speech or a 2-minute speech every week. And so she was coming right along with that, and things were moving fine. And then she was scheduled to give this big talk. And on the morning she was going to give the big talk, I got this panic text from her saying that she had woken up with laryngitis and a sore throat on the big day.
What a coincidence,
What a coincidence, you know, because usually those kind of illnesses or accidents are what I call the three Ps. Either they're punishment, prevention, or protection. And so you can see right away that her unconscious had dialed up something to prevent her or protect her from doing something that was potentially threatening to her. But with a little bit of coaching, I had her identify the fear. And guess what happened to the laryngitis in about 10 minutes?
It went away.
Amazing. Yeah. And the happy ending is she gave a nice talk and you know, everybody clapped and all that. So it's kind of one step at a time in a way. You have to do something. That's the reason I wrote the new book, is to do something every day.
Yes.
You know, get in the habit of day one. You know, just do that little 30-second activity that's at the bottom of the page. Day two, read the wisdom, do the little 1-minute activity. None of them take you longer than a few minutes, and many of them take you 10 seconds to do. And so no matter how busy you are, I guarantee you, you can get the time to do one of these little activities a day.
Is there a way to invite spirit in with it? So, you know, there's some such powerful questions. So, for example, I was just like early on in the book, you know, let's see, I had marked a couple pages here. Day 9. So you write, and I like the, you can tell the significance of the, how can I spend the majority of my time doing what I most love to do while making my greatest contribution to the world? So is this like, is a good way to do this to free write, like a prompt? Is it inviting in higher power, God, whatever resonates with somebody who's listening? I'd love to hear how you would do this.
Yes. Well, I think if at all possible, we need to open up to as much of ourselves, including spirit, as we can, to have that bless every moment of our lives.
Yes.
And I think that spirit and genius are part and parcel of each other, because in order to really have spirit move us in every moment of our lives, we need to have access to all of our skills and abilities and potential. And so I think asking yourself to express more genius in the world and to inspire more genius is a spiritual intention of the highest order. That's how to live life in a spiritual way, in my view. That's what I'm trying to do. And Katie also.
Yeah.
And have been doing, yes.
Yeah.
It's working too. I've had 40 years now of waking up every day feeling like the luckiest man on earth. And especially since Katie and I got together 44 years ago, I always tell her every day that she makes me feel like the luckiest man on earth that I get to be married to her. And I'm hoping I'm telling her that with my last breath here in a few minutes or a few years, whenever that moment occurs.
That's so beautiful. I want to ask you about you and Katie, but before I go there, tell us just quickly about Einstein time, because a lot of people don't feel like they have the time. They're stuck in their zone of, you know, incompetence and not delegating where so that they can be more in their zone of genius. What is Einstein time?
Remember what I said, a minute on a hot stove feels like an hour. An hour with your beloved feels like a minute. It goes by quickly. The reason for that is because when you're with your beloved, you're completely open. All the cells of your body are in union with that other person, wide open to being in union. When you're sitting on a hot stove, all the cells of your body are clamped down, closed to try to get away from the experience you're having.
Yes.
And so with your beloved, you want to be in that experience. So what if we just took ownership of time and said, okay, I'm going to make up the amount of time that I need to do my dutiful activities and my genius zone.
Yes.
So I'm not after anybody renting a canoe and paddling off to Tahiti to live a life of a genius hermit. I want people to be geniuses of in their own lives, you know, the star of their own show, where they feel like they are using their capabilities every minute of every day. That's a challenge.
Yes.
And it's a big one. But if you can do that, and like I say, it only takes a few minutes a day, why not? What's the better thing to do on this planet than open up to your genius and inspire the genius of other people?
Absolutely. And one of the things I love about your new book, Your Big Leap Year, is that I think if you're priming your mind to have to be thinking about questions that aren't stressful, that aren't taking you in a different direction and aren't hyper-focused on your worry, but instead it's, what would I most love to do? Where do I lose all track of time? What did I love to do when I was little and, you know, just felt so alive and enjoyed, like you said, even just 10 minutes a day? I think there's some magic that you're creating with this new book. I see that because you're helping the brain to start thinking differently. And if you ask better questions, in theory, you should get better results. Yes?
That's absolutely the correct way to look at it, because, well, E.E. Cummings said, it's always the beautiful question that gets the beautiful answer. You know, the better your question can be, like I had a friend of mine who didn't have a close relationship that he'd ever been in. And he really wanted to create one because he was getting up into his 30s. He was a psychiatrist and he was beginning to feel like he was really lonely. He wanted a life partner. And so we worked on this question, which is, how can I get the maximum amount of love in my life now or at the perfect time in the future? And so just meditating on that beautiful question, within 6 months, he met a lovely person. I've known him now for many years, and they have a little girl. And, you know, so I could see the genesis of a whole life begin with a beautiful question. So here's my homework assignment to you, ladies and gentlemen. Start finding your beautiful questions that you really want to bring into life.
Gay, I've loved this conversation so much, and I want everyone to pick up a copy of your book. Where can people learn more about you and get a copy of Your Big Leap Year?
Yes, go to the usual bookstores, your neighborhood bookstore or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Books A Million. They all have tons of them, and I just got a note from somebody that bought the last one in Beverly Hills. So if you're in Beverly Hills, wait till tomorrow to go book shopping or get it from one of the online book shopping. Also, go to hendricks.com. That's our main website, hendricks.com. And we've had a website, for 20 years now, and put a lot of energy into it. So you can find out just about everything about us there and get free videos, and also find out how to go over if you want to go to our nonprofit Foundation for Conscious Living. That has another website with lots of free videos and trainings and things on it. So we're all over the place.
Thanks, Kay. And I'll link all of these in the show notes so everyone can just access it so quickly over at thegoodlifecoach.com. Share this with all your friends. We all need to be living in our zone of genius. And you are so lovely, Kay. Such an honor to have you on today. Something shifted within me and I'm grateful to you. I'm feeling the good energy from you, and I'm excited to jump into your big leap year and continue to expand. So thank you from my heart.
Very good. Many blessings for a lifetime in your genius zone.
Thank you, Kay. Thank you. Hey, friend, I have one request before we sign off today. If you've gained any value from any of the interviews that you've tuned into, would you take just 1 minute and leave a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts? It's actually how more women can find the show, and I want to continue growing a community of women who are loving themselves and living full on. So thank you for all of your support, and I look forward to being back with you next week. Bye for now.
This podcast is presented for entertainment and educational purposes only. Any information provided is not intended to be a substitute for medical, mental health, or other professional advice. Seek out your trusted healthcare provider or other qualified professional for all matters dealing with your health and well-being. Any opinions or information provided by a guest are their own and not those of Michelle Lamoureux or the company.